From downtown Milwaukee, welcome to Money Talk with Bob Landis. Each week, professional advisors from Landis & Company Investments discuss the latest financial developments, offering timely insight and long-term perspective.
This is Money Talk for January 29th, 2021. Your Milwaukee Bucks are getting busy with five games in the next 8 days. And unlike the Bucks, the Packers don't have any scheduled games this week.
Oh, too soon.
Let's start in Florida. A guy in Orlando illegally converted his house into a restaurant. He denied it was a restaurant in spite of the flashing 20-foot neon sign hanging over the entry. In Michigan, someone robbed a drive-through bank. Not the drive-up window. Oh, no, they robbed the pneumatic tubes. The bad guys sent a robbery note through the tube, and the teller then put the cash in the tube and sent it back. Sounds like even bank robbers are practicing social distancing. In India, farmers, to protect their large animals, are now painting big bug eyes on the butts of their animals. The idea is to ward off large predators, and it seems to work. The wolves and tigers are just too busy laughing to kill anything. This may be the strangest story I've done. In Seattle, when you pass away, you have the option of being turned into human compost. So now, if you want, you can end up back in your own garden, and you'll literally be pushing up your own daisies. And finally, drones seem to be everywhere. They're being used for traffic reports, news coverage, and of course, deliveries. Well, in Ohio, someone flew a drone over the state prison walls and dropped bags of marijuana all over the prison yard. Sounds like someone is trying to pay it forward. On the podcast today, we have Steve Giles, Chris Evers, Joel Dreesing, and wrapping up the week, here's Kyle Tedding.
Well, thanks for that, Max. A rough week for stocks. They're worst since October of last year. The NASDAQ down 3.5% today to close the bell at 13,543. The S&P 500 down 3.3%, closing at 37.14, and the Dow Jones Industrial Average also down 3.3%, lost 623 points today to close at 29,981. For the year, the Dow now down 2%, the S&P down 1%. The NASDAQ still in positive territory, though, up 1.4%. And, you know, I think as we kind of look down the board here, you know, maybe the place to start today is – with the story that's captured everyone's attention this week. It led to what has been record volumes for market trading and volumes in which and volumes occurring in a market in which there wasn't necessarily all that much bad news, wasn't necessarily all that much surprise. And so, you know, obviously the thing that's carried the day recently has been this talk of GameStop, the short squeeze that was going on with and I'm going to throw out some terms here for our investors that may be new to them, but the short squeeze that resulted from Redditors essentially coming together on an online message board to say, this seems like a good idea. And so while this very much sounds like the David and Goliath story that these individual traders came together to tackle some of the larger hedge funds that had been shorting some of these positions, you know, I think it's more a conversation about trading and speculation than it is about investing. And so while there's plenty of podcasts out there that are more than willing to go deep on the nuances of the short squeeze on gamma trades, you know, we're probably not the place for that, other than to say that if you're focused on your portfolio from week to week and especially day to day, this kind of stuff can have a pretty meaningful impact. But what I think is critical for investors to remember here, and I'm going to make a very specific distinction between investors and traders, or investors and those that want to speculate, the very significant point to remember is that long-term stock markets trade on fundamentals. They trade on earnings and interest rates. And the reality of this GameStop trade, of other short squeezes that we're seeing right now, is that there really just aren't fundamentals to this trade. And so I want to stress that, yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, it's absolutely something that impacts a short term. But, you know, I think as we look at the long run for our investments, this will be a blip on, you know, kind of what we think of as, you know, 2021 in review when we get to the end of the year. So, you know, just to put that in some perspective, you know, as always, Steve, Chris, feel free to chime in on this. But again, want to stress that this is an investment show, not a speculative trading show.
But you're absolutely right, Kyle. And I always am reminding clients that longer term, there's really only two things that move the market: interest rates and earnings. Obviously, this week, GameStop, among some other stocks, have been moved by very short-term knee-jerk reactions to whether it's speculators or hedge fund traders, as you allude to. But that might be a great segue into talking about some of the fundamentals that we saw come out. Obviously, a lot of positives as we finished out the year and got some economic data at the end of January.
And I think, Steve, that really is the key here, that as we look at what was actually happening underlying this trading, there really was some good news. You know, first and foremost, you go back to November and Moderna and Pfizer coming out with, you know, their research on their respective vaccines. And this week, news on Johnson & Johnson's single dose vaccine, 66% effective against moderate and severe cases, or preventing moderate and severe cases of COVID-19, and better than 85% effective at those severe cases. And so, you know, I think one more feather in the cap of the researchers and scientists that have put all of this immense response together. You know, I can't stress enough that the markets have been driven by pandemic, the economy has been driven by pandemic, and science is the way out here. Medicine is the way out here. And so to see, you know, this positive news from Johnson & Johnson, I think that's a pretty big deal. Chris, beyond the vaccine, plenty of other stuff to be happy about this week, though.
Yeah, you know, I'm trying to, you know, not get too caught up in lose the forest through the trees, so to speak. You know, the general trend here is the economic data is getting better. You know, I think we see that in a lot of areas of the market, be it, you know, the housing market, whether it's general GDP print, you know, getting better, and looking at the consumer situation. You know, I think the general trend is things are getting better. And, you know, the market for the most part anticipated that, you know, here in middle of the year of 2020, and you saw the market recover based on that. So as we go further into the year, I think the anticipation is for continued strong recovery in economic data points. You know, we'll keep watching that, but I think it's important not to overreact to each individual print that comes through, you know, over the coming months and weeks ahead.
Well, Chris, what I am very optimistic about, and I got to be careful, I have to caution my optimism. This market really has done very well since November on the coattails of the announcement of those initial vaccines. And this week we had two more companies that announced some positive results with respect to their vaccine work, even though they weren't as successful in their efficacy as the prior ones. It still is a good sign that we're heading in the right direction. And I think a lot of what this market is telling us isn't so much trading on the chaos of the pandemic that was 2020, but the optimism of the recovery that's going to be coming. So many people saw their savings accounts last year go up. We had in 2020 incomes across the United States go up as people were foregoing vacations, foregoing going out to dinner, not going out to movies. And the more we get into this year and we have a successful rollout of the vaccines, and I should disclaimer the fact that, yeah, it's been bumpy up to now, not just in the U.S., but I think globally they've had some hurdles to overcome with respect to vaccine delivery. But once you get to the level of people returning to a more normal degree of shopping, spending money, we all know that 70% of GDP comes from consumer spending. This market is telling us as a leading indicator that it's optimistic how we might be finishing this year.
Joel, maybe that's a good place to bring you in. We got data on personal savings, and Steve was alluding to, really got data on household finances more broadly, but personal savings part of that report. And Steve was alluding to the fact that personal savings rates have gone up considerably, in large part because people just aren't spending. You know, the income side of that equation has been helped by the fact that those that are out of work got increased payments for unemployment for part of the year. Those that are out of work got stimulus checks, or those that are lower income got stimulus checks. And so there has been support on the income side that has helped us get through. We've said for a long time how important the CARES Act and potentially subsequent bills will be to continue to navigate this pandemic. But, you know, in particular, as Steve alludes to, I think that personal savings rate's a big thing as we consider the road ahead.
That's right, Kyle. That's a big hope for coming out of this recession, if we're still in a recession, and coming out of it relatively quickly. By the end of 2020, according to numbers that came out this week, Americans had been saving, consumers were saving nearly $2 trillion. $3 trillion, which was more than double the year-end savings amount ever before, going back to 1947. So that, you know, that's a lot of money, and it's virus, coronavirus driven. Either people didn't want to spend because they were afraid of, you know, what else was coming with the economy, or they didn't have a chance to spend. You know, the places that they would normally be spending their money were closed or restricted. So there's hope later on in the year that, you know, after the vaccines take effect, after, you know, we're all feeling a little more comfortable, that money's going to be unleashed. And as Steve pointed out, that's the main driver of our economy. We had numbers this week on the gross domestic product, which is the main measure of how our economy is doing. And it showed that in the fourth quarter of last year, the economy was growing at an annual rate of 4%. That's the number that we see in all the headlines. But that's like, you know, reporting a quarter of basketball saying that a team scored 35 points. Well, they're not scoring 140 points a game, you know. So if you look at the full year of 2020, with all the setbacks earlier in the year, you know, we still haven't overcome those. The GDP is now back where it was at the end of 2018. So, you know, 2 years backward. It was the first time that GDP had gone negative in a full year since the last recession. And it was in almost 70 years of data. It was the first, the biggest dip ever. It was 3.5% below how we ended in 2019. But because we see that 4%, you know, increase in the fourth quarter, and we had 33% the quarter before that, and 31% rate the quarter before that, we see those trends, and that's telling us that we still can make way, you know, toward recovery. But again, it depends on the virus. You know, the virus is even helping to generate some of the momentum for growth. Steve mentioned housing. That's a bright spot in the economy, and we had numbers this week on pending home sales, new home sales. They're all as good as they were back before the last recession. And it's driven in part because of COVID-19, you know, people wanting bigger spaces, moving from urban areas to, less populated areas. So that's really, you know, one of the things that's driving that. Something I think we can talk about a little bit more later, but the virus is also generating more innovation. Those of us, you know, as the people on this call, I mean, you know, we're still working. We're not working as we did a year ago, but we're still, you know, in the economy. We're still, you know, generating, you know, what we do, but we're doing it in a different way. And there's more of that. And that's going to help the economy, not only now, but in the future as well.
Joel, I think it's worth pointing out too, that as much as we did see negative year over year growth last year for GDP, the recovery was so much better than what everybody was anticipating early on back in February, March, and April. And because of this, because of this innovation with technology, we've been able to stay productive. And I think people weren't anticipating that we would be where we are now 10 months ago.
And Steve, yeah, I agree. And I think that's something that's hard to figure into the calculations. when they're making those forecasts. The other thing, and Fed Chair Jerome Powell pointed this out in his news conference this week, but one of the other things that helped drive the recovery, and we mentioned this before too, is the stimulus, the payments to households, the support for people who have lost their jobs. And you'll notice that actually the recovery, you know, was petering out more toward the end of the year, A, because of the virus, but also B, because, you know, Congress had to have that, what, $2 billion, $2 trillion stimulus package last spring, and then they didn't do anything else until last month.
You know, Joel, we've got a newsletter coming out this afternoon. I mean, you mentioned it a bit earlier, but one of the focuses that I think I've tried to communicate to clients is the importance of the productivity gains that are coming from this pandemic, that for the roughly 10 million jobs we still are out, for the hundreds of thousands of people in this country who have already died, you know, those are horrible, horrible things that this pandemic has taken from us. And the flip side of that, if there is a flip side to be had here, is that there are going to be meaningful gains from the forced changes in the way we do business, from the forced ways that we've had to change our consumption preferences. You know, I think the critical piece for us is, no more are you, and I mentioned this in the article that I put together for this newsletter, but no more are you stuck, taking a day off work because you can't make it in because your car died or because of weather. Now, not everybody can work remotely, but for those that can, it's a whole new universe of ways that you can participate in your work environment without actually being there. And so, it's maybe a jumping off point for that conversation. And Chris, I know you and I have talked about kind of the broader implications of why you own stocks in the first place, of why stocks have done as well as they have historically. It's because businesses are the innovators of our country. They're the thing that creates these new, opportunities. And so, as we look at the impact of the pandemic, first and foremost, I think the productivity gains we've seen are here to stay. First and foremost, I think, that means that there's going to be some really incredible opportunities, even already that we've seen, but especially once we return back to some new semblance of normal.
Yeah, I mean, the saying goes, what, necessity drives innovation. You know, I think that's absolutely true, during the pandemic. And, it's always kind of been that way. You know, a terrible thing, obviously, what's occurred this year for millions of people around the country, but it has driven a necessity for us to innovate and create new forms of technology. Kyle, as you point out, at the end of the day, innovation and technological improvement is what drives a lot of returns in the stock market, what drives gross domestic product improvement. Those technological improvements that, let's just say autonomous vehicles, that cuts a lot of expenses, out of businesses' bottom line that then can go to profits to shareholders. That also enables, workers to be able to work on higher level, more creative processes because they're no longer needed to do, executing jobs, so to speak. So, this technology that we drive via, software, autonomous vehicles, video conferencing, that's what drives the market and the economy forward long term. This terrible situation has driven a necessity for innovation, and you got to tip your cap to people out there working hard to fix the problems.
Well, and I think it speaks to the fact that the stock market isn't the economy as well, that, you can have 2% GDP growth in perpetuity and still have stocks do better than that, in part because it all depends on which stocks you're measuring, and in part because, some of the biggest indexes are always going to concentrate in some of those, the most innovative areas. And, the best example we can see right now, the S&P 500 is 38% technology stocks and communication services stocks. So, communication services being things like Disney, the media giants, some of the search engines, those kinds of things. So 38% of the S&P 500 is those companies. That's only 6% of GDP growth, though, comes from those companies. And it's 2% of total employment here in the U.S. And so I think we get the benefits as stock investors of all of the best parts of that, even if the GDP number that we print every quarter doesn't get to fully participate. And in particular, you look at technology stocks, they're not large employers. You know, you can scale a technology business without having to hire the way you would if you build airplanes, right? That every new airplane you build requires nearly as many people as the last one you built to do it, and all the tools and all the space to store it. But if you want to sell another instance of, a piece of software, it's the same developer and the same program you sold before. You might need a little more sales help to do it. But, ultimately, technology is this much more efficient thing than we're used to in our economy. And so I want to stress that, I think we need to separate that conversation sometimes and understand that as investors, we can get more from our portfolio than what the economy would otherwise suggest just in the ways we participate. I think, most importantly right now, the stress of the progress of vaccination is what drives markets. And, we're in this place where the news is starting to get a little bit better, but, clearly stocks have gotten a bit expensive. Clearly there's some volatility still to be digested in the market. And so, I think the question that we often get from investors when they come in is, all right, this is what I've been doing with my portfolio all along, and I really like it, but I've got, a rollover from my IRA, or I inherited some money, or I've got some source of income, whether it's the new billionaire in Michigan after winning the Powerball or the Mega Millions last week. So I guess, Steve, how do you handle a client who's saying, here's what I've done all along, but it's a different universe today than when I started investing with you? What should we do today with that new money that's coming in?
Well, it's a great question, Kyle, and it's one we obviously get all the time. And I think the conversation needs to start with what your goals are and what your time horizon is. And for most investors, their time horizon today isn't any different than it was yesterday before they received that rollover or before they had that windfall. And with that in mind, knowing that you have such a long time horizon, building a balanced portfolio that for the most part accounts for downside protection and risk reduction in the form of bonds, once you can agree on how much money you need to have in your quote unquote safe investments, you can back into the allocation you're going to need in the stock side that you don't have to worry about for 8, 10, or 12 years.
I think that's absolutely the right way to view this, that ultimately everything you need to do as an investor comes down to a plan. It comes down to how do we achieve the objectives that you have in a way that, maximizes the return for the level of risk that you're comfortable with. And so I think for most people, that new money coming in probably looks similar to the old money, but it also affords an opportunity to do some different things. In part because dry powder is a wonderful tool. And so you're not forced to consider, is this a better option than the one I already have? You can say, okay, we've got a little more to play with here. We can kind of find those new opportunities.
Hey, Cal, I just wanted to mention here that one of the more popular videos that we have in our Money Talk video library is something that Isabel Romero did a couple of years ago on how to handle a windfall. So so each of these podcasts come with show notes that have a little more background, mostly economic information. But at the top of the show note for this week's podcast at landis.com, I'll also have a link to that video.
Such a great reminder, Joel. We have some incredibly talented colleagues that have put together some incredible videos on many, many topics that are relevant even still today, despite the fact that we've done them 3, 4, 5 years ago sometimes. And so, I appreciate the reminder on that. I think we can continue to remind clients that our YouTube channel has those, that you can search our website and find, those resources as well. And, if you've got a particular question, I think it's a great place to start as far as, you know, kind of what our broad perspective is. As always, give us a call. As always, shoot us an email. And we're happy to, I think, go a little bit deeper into specifics. But from just a place to start, I think that's a great resource to have. Well, as always, we enjoy doing the show for you. We will talk to you again next week. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Bob Landis. If you have a financial question you want answered on next week's show, email it to moneytalk@landis.com. To keep informed throughout the week, visit our Money Talk page at landis.com.